Hello and welcome back to the ring. I, of course, am your host, the one and only B.O.B., and with me today, our extra special guest host. He has wrestled all over the Midwest and Canada. He was an MPX Cruiserweight Champion, a three-time tag team champion who has wrestled the likes of Silas Young, Lenny Lane, Eric Rowan, Aria Davari, Perry Saturn, and the one that made my wife pop, Seth Rollins, formerly known as Tyler Black. He may be part of Midwest Ground and Air, but don't call him UPS, the one and only Nate Bash. How are you today, Nate?
I'm doing well, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. How was your weekend? We'll go ahead and start things off there.
Going to be a lot of fun taking a look at SummerSlam.
Say again?
Where'd you go? Huh? I might have lost you.
Hello? Did you lose me? Hello? Uh-oh.
There you are, Bob. Hey.
Hey.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Hey, good to go. We got a little
Yeah, of course we had the audio issue as soon as I get here. Pleasure to be here. I haven't done one of these before, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, right on. How was your weekend, by the way?
It was really nice. Spent some time with family. I got a little kid, so it's good to have that time with her, with my family and her grandparents,
Right on. Good to go. It's the little one. He just got her to bed, apparently, this evening.
That's right.
It's a battle with young ones, I've heard. No kids myself, but I have enough nieces and nephews to last me a lifetime.
Yeah, they're a handful, but the good outweighs the bad 1,000-fold.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, you ready to get into some SummerSlam 97?
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet. Let's start off SummerSlam 97, Heart and Soul, from the East Rutherford, New Jersey. I forget the name of the arena, formerly known as the Meadowlands. We got JR, Vince, and King on commentary. And we open up with a package on Taker, Brett, and HBK. Of course, HBK quote unquote lost his smile, and Bret Hart is, of course, doing the Canadian babyface American heel gimmick, and Taker's in the middle of the Kane stuff. So a lot going on right there in just the main event, which I guess focused on Life Is Not Fair. But then again, then we all know that. And by the way, it's brought to you by Stridex. That's the most important thing.
I remember Stridex. Yeah, we all used Stridex back in the 90s.
Well, the worst part of it was it actually dried out your skin and made it worse.
Oh, I know, so, and it hurt.
Yeah. So, let's see. Any thoughts before we get into this? This is the Brett's last big pay-per-view, the last big one before, we've got the Montreal screw job coming up. Anything else you were looking forward to coming into this?
Well, I had seen this show, obviously, as a teenager, when it happened, and watched it, on VHS. And I hadn't really gone back and reviewed it a ton, since. So it was really fun for me to go back and take a look at this, kind of with the new lens and, knowing what I know now. As opposed to being a kid and being a fan. And it was a really fun show. Some really good storytelling. There were a couple of matches that maybe weren't what they were hoping to get out of them, but we'll get into that.
Oh yeah. There were a few duds, a few sailed and a few just kind of dribbled down the first baseline.
That's right.
First off, we have Triple H and Mankind in a steel cage match. China comes out with Triple H. Of course, we got the big blue steel cage, which I've never been a fan of the big blue cage, just because it looks like it hurts, and that's mainly the biggest thing. That and the whole going out of the cage to win the match, or going out of the door to win the match, being the only way you can win, is a problem for me. I mean, I understand what they're getting at, and even though that defeats the purpose of what a cage match is supposed to be, at least have a pin or submission option too, because it it narrows the how much you can do inside the cage. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And actually, this match is a perfect example of that. If Mankind had been able to just get a pin, 1, 2, 3, after he dropped the big elbow,
mm-hmm.
rather than having to climb up over the top, the match could have ended a lot more decisively. And it wouldn't, it just kind of felt like he climbed up and over once, mm-hmm. and then back up to drop the elbow, you know, and then he had to climb up and over a second time. And if he had been able to get the 1, 2, 3 there, it might have ended the match a little more decisively.
Oh, yeah, definitely agree. Well, you're going to get a much bigger reaction from him pinning Triple H in the middle of the ring after delivering, because everybody's high off of that, you know, Jimmy, off of that Superfly Snuka moment, and just it felt like that was where the end of the match should have been. So I definitely agree there. To go back, some of the other things, we got a mandible claw. China interfered a lot in this match, but not very well. There's a point where she gives the ref a low blow, I think. Triple H gives a suplex off the top, which was a really good looking spot. This is one of those matches, especially early on when they were throwing each other against the cage, where I was like, Mick Foley's the only one who can work with this cage and make it convincing, because he's literally just willing to throw his body into this thing. You know, when it goes on the other foot and Triple H goes into the cage wall, you could kind of see he's very tentative about it. Whereas Foley, being Foley, just was like, okay, I'm just going to throw myself at this thing, and if I get hurt, that's what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just kind of Mick doing what Mick did, you know, and he wanted to make it look real, and it absolutely did. There mm-hmm. were a few bumps that he took into that cage that really make you cringe. He took the backdrop into it.
Oh yeah.
And then, of course, the cage door slam on his head from China.
Yeah, that one, that looked stiff. There was one, I forget exactly, I think it was Hunter just threw him at it, but instead of just like kind of bouncing into the cage, he literally turned his body sideways and almost did, like just threw his back up against the middle of the cage right there where the steel bar is, where it gives a little bit. I just like, and it crumples down to the mat. And I was like, oh, Dick, what are you doing?
That's, yeah, something nobody asked him to do that he absolutely didn't have to do, that Mick just went out there and did on his own.
Oh, yeah. Because there's a point where China slams his head. We mentioned that. And then she throws in a chair. And she's in the cage for what feels like forever while Mick is, I forget what he's doing. Is he going back up to the top or something? I can't remember. And then,
well, so what happened, I watched this over twice. I think what happened is, at the end, when Mick climbs down to win, after he's already dropped the elbow,
yeah,
she's pulling Triple H to the door. Mm-hmm. So it's like a photo finish, right? Mick drops his feet just before she pulls him out.
Yeah.
I think she got in the ring early.
Yeah, that might have been what it was.
And felt Triple H told her, it's not time yet. You have to get out. And so that's why it was awkward with her getting in the ring, because Mick mm-hmm. still had to climb back up, drop the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was time, once he climbed up to go over again, then it was time for her to pull Triple H out. And I think maybe she just was early for her spot there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then she was early with the when he hits, when he goes for the pedigree on the chair, and Mick flips him up into the first, he, what was it, a DD? No, he pulls his legs out. And then he flips him up into the cage to hit China off the cage. She just kind of stood there on the side of the cage for what felt like forever, because you're wondering, why is she just, you know, like, she wasn't yelling or trying to interfere in any way, just standing there on the side of the cage waiting for her spot.
I think that was just an experience a little bit. But yeah, you're right. It did feel like she was standing there for a long time. One thing that I did notice in the storytelling of this, that they told in this match, is that Triple H never takes over on Mankind without assistance from China. Every single time that the momentum swings and mm-hmm. and Mick gets cut off, it's because of some interference from China, which I think is a really important storytelling piece. This is my favorite version of China, the strong, silent bodyguard type. This really resonated with me, and that was something that I noticed was that, yeah, Triple H never took over on offense without some interference from China.
That is a really good point. I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think to notice that, but you're right. She does. She's all over this match as far as whenever Triple H would get. Yeah. So, thank you for that. She interferes again. You're right. We get the attempt at the photo finish where she's pulling Triple H out and Mick drops off. And of course, then he crumbles, and then the Dude Love music plays, and he exits out as Dude Love, and everybody goes home happy in this one. I gave it a B-. I didn't like China's work in this match. I see what you're getting at with the storytelling, but just probably inexperience in not knowing what to do and not being able to improvise in the moment. So I gave it a B-. What do you think?
I really enjoyed it. This is one of my favorite cage matches, and a lot of it is because I'm an Attitude Era kid, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is just going to resonate with me automatically. But this is also one of my favorite Triple H matches. I really enjoyed the storytelling. I think this is an A match. It's a great way to start the show.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff in the middle that maybe isn't the greatest, and then it ends on a high note. And so to start and end, those are the things that people are going to remember.
Yeah, very true.
And also it makes sense to start with the cage assembled, because then you can take it down and not have to worry about putting it up or taking it down in the middle of the show. So that makes sense too.
Very, very true. And that cage takes forever to take. That's another reason that blue steel cage is always a pain in the ass. It takes forever to get down. But to kill some time, they bring out a New Jersey governor. What's her name? Anyway. The New Jersey governor comes out with the Headbangers and Gorilla Monsoon, and they give her a belt, and she got rid of the wrestling tax, wasn't it? Some sort of entertainment tax.
Yeah, she was somehow politically involved in some sort of coup that Vince pulled to not have to pay taxes in New Jersey.
Well, that wasn't... Now, that didn't have anything to do with when it started to become sports entertainment and ceased to be professional wrestling.
It might have. I'm not an expert on that, so don't quote me, but that it might have been related.
Because I know that was the reason why it was that in the Athletic Commission. Vince didn't want to pay Athletic Commission dues or be regulated by an Athletic Commission.
I think that they were all one and the same,
okay,
if I'm not mistaken.
There you go. So that might be the beginning. That might have been the unbeknownst beginning of what became sports entertainment right there on this pay-per-view. And then they show us footage from the beach party. We get Stone Cold flipping everybody off, Shawn on top of a limo. And then we go to the next match, Brian Pillman versus Goldust. And, of course, if Pillman loses, he has to wear a dress. And... Goldust is accompanied by Marlena. I also wanted to point out, this is two former WCW guys. I guess a lot of people, I didn't think about that the first time through watching it, but the second time through, I was like, well, yeah, that's Dustin and Pillman. They've worked together in WCW, so they obviously are familiar. We get a jump start. The Goldust kissed Pillman. They call it a lip lock. Pillman goes after Marlena, and Goldust just decapitates him on the floor. Like that was a good spot, because it felt like with the camera work that the Dustin just came absolutely out of nowhere and put Pillman on the ground.
Yeah, that's right. Kiss spot was actually really good. If I could go back to that for a second.
Yeah.
The way that they worked into that, Dustin was really rocking and rolling. In the beginning, he goes to hit the 10 punch, and then Pillman blocks the 10 punch and goes for the inverted atomic drop.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a clever spot, because Pillman is 6 inches shorter than Dustin, right? So the inverted atomic drop doesn't work, because his crotch is several inches higher than the knee. And then he hits him with the kiss. Pillman bails to the outside. Really, really great pacing. And, and it really looked visually, it came off really well.
It did. later on, Pillman's up on the top and takes a bad spill. I'm not sure if he was trying to hit with his crotch on the ropes and then spilled to the outside. It looked like he might have slipped. Was this before or after? Because his boot came undone. The zipper in his boot came undone somewhere during this match.
I couldn't tell where the boot was, whether that was before or after this. But yeah, it looked like he was going for the crotch, and he just missed and almost fell all the way to the floor. It was a little bit scary.
But he does, he recovers pretty good. They do a good recovery with it, with him and Marlene on the outside. And then what does he do? An elbow off the top, doesn't he? If I remember correctly.
I believe so.
And then there's a really great camera work production towards the end of this match where Pillman's got Goldust in a headlock. And JR's talking about it's all in the eyes of Pillman. And almost right after he says that, the producer cuts to that really good tight shot of just Pillman, like right from the eyes and nose, just crazy looking. There's another shot, and then they start talking about Marlena, and they cut to a shot of her. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I've noticed it. And then I noticed it in a really good way. It was like, oh, they're listening to him during the match and cutting to what they're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually have that in my notes as well. When Pillman puts that rear chin lock on him and the announcers are talking about the intensity, and exactly like you said, look at the eyes of Pillman, says JR. The intensity is really there. When you put on a hold like that, it's really important to maintain that kind of intensity. You're not just sitting there in a headlock to catch your breath.
Oh yeah.
Everything's got to be meaningful, and we'll see more examples of that later on in the card with Owen and Brett.
Oh yeah, you definitely. You notice, especially anymore, you really notice when somebody knows how to work a hold, how to wrench a headlock or an armbar, or just any hold you can get a hold of to make it look like you're actually doing something, not just sitting there holding the guy's arm, so on.
And it's on both guys. Yeah, the guy selling can't just sell the hold. He has to struggle a little bit to try to get out of it.
So Goldust makes a good comeback. There's a great spot where, Goldust? Goldust is going for the Bulldog, and Pillman pushes him off, and Goldust just like collapses and rolls outside the ring. Unfortunately, this spot was followed by probably the worst spot of the match, where Goldust goes to do a sunset flip over the top rope and can't make the full rotation, lands. Pillman's trying to struggle because the spot is for him to get to the ropes so that Marlena can hit him with the gimmicked purse. So he's struggling. Goldust is struggling to make it look like he's holding him down. And the whole thing falls apart a little bit. Marlena hits Pillman and Goldust ends up winning after he gets knocked out in the sunset flip. But that ending really took me out of the match, because up until that part, I was like, they're doing a really good job, working around Pillman's ankle and leg, you know, and making him look effective. It just, that one spot was just like, oh, I felt bad for him both, because I'm sure that they were like, goddamn, when they got back behind the curtain. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It's hard. It's hard with a spot like that when it's supposed to be the finish and it has to be bang, bang like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you miss, there's no way to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't reposition yourself to just do that move again.
Yeah.
And I think that's the trouble that they ran into here.
Yep. But other than that, I gave it a C. I thought it was overall, it was a pretty good match. There were parts of it that lost me a little bit, and I think the ending just took so much oomph out of everything that they had built up. I just kind of left like, okay, it was good, but it wasn't groundbreakingly great.
I agree with that assessment. It was short. They told a good story, but it was a short match, and then obviously the blown finish does take you out of it. a little bit, but I love both these guys.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Of course, then Pillman ends up with the mannequin with the dress on in the ring and does his best to recover by tearing the mannequin up and walking off just as upset as he came in almost. So there we go. And
one other note that I have here is just about how Pillman looked. He might have been in the best shape of his career here. He looked absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, I didn't write that down, but you're absolutely correct. Thank you for that. He definitely and with the busted leg, that was the thing that really got me in this match. Is they worked around that leg so well that you couldn't even tell he had ever been injured. You know?
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's a credit to both him and Dustin for putting this match together the way they did. I just, that finish, man, I wish they had been able to pull that off. Speaking of things I wish they'd pulled off, I wish they'd pulled this next one off of the card completely. The Godwins versus LOD. The best thing about The best thing about this match for me was the promo and the finish, and everything else just kind of happened. LOD does a great promo at the beginning. They come out to chants. You know, it's fantastic. A Hawk does the dive off the apron, and then everything just kind of, I don't know, starts swirling. I literally wrote down, I just can't get into this one. Like, there was a bear hug that just seemed to go on forever. The Godwins had an illegal tag. Oh, I wanted to talk about that illegal tag, because they tagged when one of the guys was standing on the second rope. And that technically is an illegal tag. Both feet are supposed to be on the apron over the top rope, hand-to-hand contact.
Why on earth would one of the Godwins need to be standing on the second rope to make a tag?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I guess, I don't know. I can't.
I didn't even notice that. Good call. Good catch.
But there's a quote-unquote hot tag to Hawk, who comes back in and wrecks everybody up. They go for the Doomsday Device, but they can't hit. But they don't hit that, so they hit the spike pile driver and said LOD wins.
The crowd wanted to see the Doomsday Device.
Yeah, I wanted to see the Doomsday Device.
They came up. The crowd came up big for the Doomsday Device.
Mm-hmm. But I gave it a D simply because it is the Road Warriors, and I've loved the Road Warriors since I was 6 years old and first started watching wrestling. So I can't completely, you know, it's not their fault they were. And I think this is one of those matches where maybe it's, I wouldn't even say better on paper, because I've never been a huge fan of the Godwins, but it's two big guys against two big guys, and it just feels like there's not that much you can do in a tag team sense with that, because who's going to sell, you know, who's going to be the underneath, you know.
Well, LOD, the answer to that question is nobody. Nobody was going to sell in that match. Positives, I've got Mark Canterbury moves around really well for a man his size.
That's true. I will give you that. And
I really like both these teams, but I agree with you. This match wasn't great. The Godwins are a really great looking team. I always thought big, mean looking guys. Both Mark Canterbury and Tex. Yeah. And then obviously the LOD are legendary.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I think this is one of those matches, like you said, that's better on paper.
Yeah. Well, it's, Cordette talks about it. It's one of those things that you talk, well, what's it going to look like? What's going to happen when these two big Goliaths, and then they actually collide, and you're like, oh, well, that wasn't nearly as good as I thought it was going to be.
So, that's why you do it on pay-per-view.
Oh yeah. Definitely. And I mean, I've never been a huge fan of the Godwins. They have periodically, especially in Survivor Series matches, it seems like they always impress me the most, because they get to do, like, they actually get to do good work and show off athleticism that maybe they don't in their other matches, because they're usually overpowering everyone. But
yeah, both guys were well traveled and knew what they were doing in there, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But so we go from that to another segment that was nothing but a popcorn fart, the $1 million giveaway. All I wrote was, this drags on forever, and spoiler, nobody wins the money.
We got lots of camera time for Sonny, and I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't, with everything going on with Sonny right now, I don't really want to comment, but I will say that Sonny appears to be an actual human being who was having fun, whereas Sable did not.
I think this was one of the first times they had Sable on camera, wasn't it? I think she still was figuring out exactly what she was supposed to do on camera.
Yeah, because it looked like she was kind of just twiddling her thumbs and bored there for a little bit. And
the hard thing too is when you put her next to Sonny, who was absolutely on her game.
Oh yeah.
It really, by contrast, Sable, it didn't look so great.
So after that, we get a package on Shamrock and Davey Boy, in which they explain the dog food. Dog food stipulation, whereas if Davey Boy Smith loses the European Championship in their upcoming match, he will eat a can of dog food. I guess they had a arm wrestling competition, which always works out really well in WWE.
Of course it does.
Anytime an arm wrestling competition happens, you know it's going to be a nice, clean arm wrestling. Nothing ever bad is going to happen. It's not going to go sideways, and it's certainly not going to be boring.
Well, it's a gentleman's affair.
Yes, very, very much so. So the next match is Davey Boy Smith versus Ken Shamrock for the European Championship. Of course, Davey Boy, British Bulldog, coming in as the champion. Shamrock jumpstarts this one. Wrote down, Shamrock is good, but stiff. He looks like he works really stiff.
He looks like he's working really fast, like he's in a hurry to get all his offense in.
That's what it is. That's what I'm picking up on. There's something about it that I was just like, I can see that. Like, he needs to slow it down a little bit and let things breathe a little bit more. Is that what you're saying?
He could give things a little bit more room to breathe. And I think, again, like China, that's maybe a little bit of inexperience. But Shamrock's great. Everything he does looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But he could give things a second to breathe.
But so Bulldog swings the momentum early and starts to slow the pace down, which is nice because, like you said, when Shamrock's on top, it's very, very fast paced. So Bulldog slows everything down. I wrote nice sunset flip spot. I think that was where Bulldog went for a sunset flip and Shamrock caught him into an ankle lock, and it was just so smooth. It was just like, boom. As soon as the sunset flip happened, Shamrock switched the momentum, and next thing you know, he's popped up and got Davey Boy in an ankle lock.
Yeah, that worked MMA stuff that Shamrock did always looked really smooth.
But Davey Boy gets back on top and can't put Shamrock away. Shamrock gets a false hope spot on the outside. And this was something I wrote down because shortly after this was when I think Davey Boy was either going to suplex him onto the stairs or DDT him. I'm not sure exactly what it was supposed to be, but Shamrock just kind of fell forward. It looked like Davey Boy was already a little upset with Shamrock in that match. Of course, you know, that could have just been for me as a fan. Shortly after that, Bulldog slaps Ken Shamrock with the dog food, and Shamrock goes batshit. Hits Davey Boy in the back of the head with the dog food can. The bell starts ringing. He chokes Bulldog out. More refs come out. There's more bell ringing. The officials come out. Jerry Briscoe and Pat Patterson comes out, and then Pat Patterson eats a suplex. Jerry eats a suplex. Then some refs eat a suplex. And Kim Shamrock ends up walking out looking like a complete crazy badass.
And the crowd absolutely loved it.
Yes.
They didn't love the match, but they blew for that, for the losing it spot at the end where he was throwing everybody around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had to. It looked really good. They did it just right with the bell constantly ringing and everybody just keep, you know, people coming out in waves to try and get this guy off of off of Davey Boy. And then once they finally get him off, it looks like, oh, okay, everything's going to calm down. And then he suplexes Pat Patterson. You're like, holy crap. Then he starts attacking the referees. And it was just, it was very, very well done. It did exactly what it needed to do for Ken Shamrock without making Davey Boy really look weak or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Shamrock has great facials, whether he's selling or whether he's doing the snapped bit. And just obviously incredible intensity, and everything he does is believable. Both these guys' strikes looked really great. I'm sure they were plenty snug.
Another thing, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. What were you saying?
No, go ahead.
Another thing I wanted to point out, because I was thinking this during this match, is Davey Boy was in great shape right here. He looked like he had slimmed down a little bit, but he was still big. And I guess I was just impressed because the last time I had seen Davey Boy, he was, I guess he hadn't been hitting the gym as much. So, you know, he went up and down as far as that goes. But right here, he looked absolutely fantastic. He looked like he should be in a fight with Ken Shamrock visually. The two of them together face-to-face in the ring was a good visual, I guess, what I was trying to say.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, both guys looked like a million bucks. And I don't know, sometimes two big guys like that, when they're working a program together, you know, if they're hitting the towns at the same time and they're wrestling every night, maybe they'll go to the gym together and everything too. So I don't know if they were pushing each other in more ways than one. Well, but they both look fantastic.
That could have been, because we know Davey Boy had issues with things outside of the ring. So I'm sure if he could find somebody that would make him go to the gym with him and work out and kind of, you know, help him keep himself straight and narrow as much as you can with someone, I'm sure it would help. Anyway, I gave this one a B. I enjoyed the match. I know the crowd wasn't as into it, but I really enjoyed it. And the aftermath worked perfect. Like I said, it wasn't super groundbreaking, but it was really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, another short match, visually really good. The disqualification worked here because you had two guys who were in a believable fight. They were angry.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending was great. Yeah, I loved it.
Yep. After that, we get an interview with HBK backstage. Well, you know. Maybe he's hanging out with Matt Hardy in the stairwell. He's at backstage. He's at a backstage interview. He says he's going to be impartial and unbiased as a special ref. So, you know, you could take that for what it's worth. I wouldn't trust Shawn Michaels, especially this Shawn Michaels in this period, as far as I could throw him. But hey, he says he'll be impartial and unbiased. So. You got to take him at his
word. Yeah, setting the table for later. You know he's somehow going to be involved, but we don't know how yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, just the fact that he's a special ref makes him a part of this match. You know, this is...
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But he's going to be involved in the finish somehow. Oh, this is a little bit of foreshadowing.
So the next match is DOA versus Los Boricuas. Am I saying that right? I think that's right.
That's correct, yep.
Yes. We get a Tito Santana sighting and another jump start. I wanted to say that again because everything from here on out gets a jump start. All the matches.
Yep, that's right. I noticed that too.
And I was like, I thought of something that, again, I'm a loyal Cornette listener, but he says if you're going to do something in your match, make sure nobody else is going to do that in their match. So then it's special to your match. And I was just like, by the time we get to the main event, I'm like, another jump start? Really? Like, did nobody talk to each other? But anyway, DOA clears the ring. We get the typical cycling in and out of a 8-man tag. They do a really cool spot where they do a where they deliver snake eyes with two people on one guy. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I thought they did a nice job with eight guys of not getting too cluttered, especially in the beginning part of this match, keeping it mostly two guys in there, quick tags in and out.
Yeah, I wrote down these guys can work, especially the Los. Well, I would say especially Los Boricuas, but I think DOA was pretty good, too, for what they were doing. They were working big man stuff, but it all looked good. They could move around the ring pretty well.
Yeah, they told the story well with the DOA guys hitting power moves and then just quick tags from the Boricuas guys. They each kind of had their own style that contrasted well against each other.
The one thing I didn't like is I couldn't tell who the heels and the baby faces were. Kind of felt like it was just two heel teams. I guess Boricuas could be the baby faces, but I'm not exactly
okay,
sure.
Okay, so I'm gonna disagree with you because Brian Lee gets the hot tag later.
Okay, so you're saying the DOA was the baby faces?
I guess. This really wasn't about either one of these teams. It was more about the story of the faction warfare Farouk having kicked Crush out of the Nation and Savio Vega out of the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got the Nation coming down through the crowd halfway through the match. So this match was really more here to advance that story than it was for the match itself.
Yeah, definitely. Because I literally the next thing I wrote down was Nation of Domination comes through the crowd. And we get the Ahmed sucks chance. The match continues, and this is when everything just kind of starts breaking down. The Los Boricuas do some really good work until the complete breakdown. Like, right until the end, they were putting in really good work. And then once the Nation of Domination gets involved, once Ahmed gets hit, it's kind of all downhill from there. Los Boricuas win, and then there's a lot of sloppy fighting afterwards. Crush grabs a bike and tries to run people over in quotation marks, and then rides off down the entranceway. Thoughts?
Yeah. It was here.
It happened.
Yeah. This was a match that was on the card. Like I said, it was mostly here to advance the story of the Nation versus DOA, and the Boricuas were they did their job, being sort of also here to be sort of fodder in this feud.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a whole ton more to say about it other than it really looked like it was going to be a cluster. On paper, and it wasn't nearly as much as you would expect it to be.
Oh yeah.
One thing, once the Nation came down to ringside and they kind of zoomed out and you had a wide shot of just how many people were down at ringside, that was a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot.
Visually, it's a lot to pay attention to.
It's a lot of moving parts to keep track of just between the people in the match and the people on outside and everybody knowing what everybody else needs to be doing.
Correct.
I gave this one a D. I think I'm with you. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But that's like going to a restaurant and saying, well, how was the food? Well, it was better than I thought it was going to be. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
But, I didn't get sick.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't get food poisoning from it. So there we go. Yeah, because the first time I watched this match, now the people listening know, or they should, because I think I've said this before, I usually watch a pay-per-view twice. I'll watch it once after I've had a few beers to kind of get my instant fan perspective where I'm just enjoying watching the pay-per-view, not paying too much attention. And then I go back and I take my notes later when I've, when I'm not having beers. And so the first time I watched this, I was like, this is going to be an instant F. Like, this thing is just, this is awful. I can't pay attention to it. What's going on? But upon rewatching it, yeah, there's some really good work. It scattered throughout this match between the guys on both teams. It's such a cluster with everything else going on around it that you can't really get to focus on it, I guess.
100% correct. There were a lot of moving parts. I think they did a fine job for what it was of not getting in each other's way and telling the story that needed to be told and getting out of there on time. And, nice job there.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. I'm sure. Yeah, I didn't even think about the time situation of how much time they would have had for that. But they didn't have that much to do what they did in that amount of time was pretty good. Okay, so then we get a package on Owen Hart and Austin, and of course we get Owen Hart saying that I've beat Steve Austin. I pinned Steve Austin. I'm the man who pinned Steve Austin. I beat Steve Austin. So, and then Steve says that he'll kiss Owen's ass if he loses, which brings us into the I'd almost say the co-main event, just because this is the match, you know, just because of the gravity of the match being an IC title match, having Stone Cold, you're over badass baby face, risking having to kiss somebody's ass, you know, and as a baby face, you can't say you're going to do something and then not do it, you know? So.
No, absolutely.
And Owen coming in as champion. It's just, it feels, this is a big time match feel. Of course we get Owen Hart, the 2-time Slammy Award winning Owen Hart. When we get Michael Cole in the back getting yelled at by Austin, some things never change. And another jump start. Anything you want to say about this before I get into the play-by-play?
Not really. These guys, it's I hate to keep coming back to this, but it's believable that that these two guys have this professional rivalry that's turned personal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Owen's got these victories that he's claiming over Austin, and there's really no way to dispute it. Yep. You know, it's on video. You've seen, I beat him twice, and Austin's coming saying I'm the better man. And if I can't prove today that I'm the better man, it makes sense. There's you know, it's pretty black and white. What needs to happen here? These guys are going to have a fight.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's an old school wrestling angle is really what it is. This is really wrestling 101. And I'll get into this in a little bit about Owen. But first, we get another jump start, this time by Owen, who, after Stone Cold flips him off, he gets on, starts working the knee. It starts off really fast-paced. Like, they are hitting their sequences just one after another. Austin starts shining early and then starts to slow it down, working Owen's arms. After a little while, Stone Cold makes a mistake. Owens capitalizes, takes over, starts biting Stone Cold's fingers. Owen starts getting great heat. And I think this is another part of the reason why this feels so good and authentic is Owen was so good at getting heat. It was ridiculous. He had that, I don't know how, not whiny, but almost whiny voice that he would put on, that he sounded like he thought he was better than everybody else. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know how exactly to put it, but he made you want
to slap him. He reminded you of that kid on the playground.
Mm-hmm.
That had that voice that just grated on you, mm-hmm. who would always tease you for no reason.
Yep.
Yep.
So Owen's getting good heat, but then Steve hits the stun gun, which I didn't even know that move had a name for Austin, where he lifts him up and throws him down on the top rope with their throat over the top rope. And then the pace picks back up again. And Owen starts walking away, and Stone Cold and Austin goes after him and brings him back to the ring, but Owen gets back on top. I started this because this started getting annoying towards the second half of the match. Jerry the King talking about how much he wants to see some kissing. He wants to see somebody's ass get kissed. I was just like, Jerry, man, like, cool it. But it's King. He's going to do what he's going to do. Stone Cold gets a nice hope spot, but Owen starts working the neck. They start going back and forth. The talk about Stone Cold's neck towards the later stages of this match gets really eerie considering what ends up happening. Cause they're,
yeah, it's,
you know,
a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. But the sequences running up are, just fantastic during this period. They do a great exchange of sleepers in which Stone Cold ends up dropping into a jawbreaker on Owen. And then Owen hits a Russian leg sweep, which I always want to highlight that because that's one of my favorite moves that nobody uses anymore. And it was a freaking finishing move in the mid 80s. So, like,
yep.
You know, it was a Brad Armstrong used the Russian leg sweep in early in his NWA career. And it's such a fantastic, when you pull it off and it looks right, you do it right. It's a fantastic looking move and really looks brutal. Owen starts using the ropes, or he puts his feet up on the ropes for leverage while he has Stone Cold in a, I guess it was a headlock or reverse chin lock. I don't remember. Yep. Then he gets caught in, he gets caught by the ref. And then a little while later, he hits the pile driver. Now, here's where I wanted to stop, because JR calls it a tombstone. And I have a feeling that it was supposed to be a tombstone, that's what they had originally agreed on. Or, because I don't think I've ever even seen Owen use that style of pile driver before. If I remember correctly, he usually does a tombstone, or he does the one almost like Brett, where he just kind of falls back into the pile driver. I haven't seen him use that one, which is what I think the miscommunication was. Of course, I don't know. Like, I wasn't there, but watching it a couple of times over, it looks like that's what the big miscommunication was between Owen and Austin. What do you think?
That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. And that's how Austin writes it in his book. And I've listened to, obviously, lots of people have talked about this over the years. It sounds like that's where the miscommunication was. Austin was expecting him to go to his knees. Owen said he was going to drop to his ass. Mm-hmm. Austin trusted him to take care of him, and Owen didn't have him protected correctly, and mm-hmm. it just didn't go the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that happened. Now, you were saying earlier, I talked to you before the show, that JR had talked about this and the relationship between Owen and Stone Cold afterwards. I haven't heard that show. Do you want to just recap a little bit of what he said? Because I've always been curious about that, and I haven't heard either one of them really talk about it.
I certainly don't want to put words in JR's mouth. But you can listen to, it was a few weeks back, on JR's podcast, him and Tom, Paul Bromwell were talking about, Stone Cold, in 1997, I think was the whole episode.
Okay.
The whole episode was about Austin in 97. And, they talked at length about, this match and the injury and the relationship between the two guys. So I would go give that a listen.
There you go. JR, we're giving you a free plug. Our tens of listeners are going to swamp to your podcast.
Well, after. Finish listening
yes,
to us.
Finish listening to us, and then you can go listen to JR. JR will still be there. But Owen starts killing time while the ref looks at Austin. He's walking around getting heat, and then Austin ends up rolling him up and gets the pin. He's barely able to do it, but he does it. Austin wins, and we kind of all know what happens next. He can barely stand up. They escort him to the back, basically almost carry him to the back. I really wish they hadn't shown the pile driver again. That was, again, one of those things where it's like, oh, you didn't have to do that. I know you didn't know how serious it was, but if you didn't know, it would err on the side of caution. Maybe we don't need to see that again.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's important to explain to your audience what happened, whether it's good or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. I didn't think about it that way, but it definitely put a damper on the next match, I guess, because you don't really
know.
And
you can tell when Owen comes out. Later on in this next match, you can tell on his face that he's a million miles away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Pillman even looks... Well, Pillman always looks that way a little bit, but... so, yeah, then we get the Taker, Brett, HBK package. And it's pretty good. The King says something very intuitive at the in this when Vince, you know, Vince is asking them about HBK and is he going to be a factor in the match, whatnot. And King says HBK will be the center of attention in this match, or he will find a way to be the center of attention in this match.
I wrote that quote down too.
So, and I think it rings true here as we'll get into it. The listeners will see what I'm talking about. So this is the next match, the final match, the main event. And if there ever was a main event, this is a main event. Anywhere, anytime, anywhere. Undertaker versus Bret Hart for the WWF title with Shawn Michaels as special guest referee.
Masterful storytelling here. They really, oh, yeah. I can't say enough about this. This match is one of the reasons why people study Bret Hart.
Oh yeah, and the amount of moving parts in this match. You've got three guys that are in the match essentially, because HBK, being the special guest referee, puts an interest in him in the match. He is a part of the match. You know, as opposed to when any other referee, you don't want to see him. You're not supposed to see him. You're really not even supposed to notice them until you're supposed to notice them. But with a superstar as a special guest or a guest ref, you'd have to see them because there's a reason they're there. They're not just, oh, well, I thought I'd give the referee a night off and I'd, you know, take over. There's something that's going to happen involving them that's going to determine the outcome of the match, like you were saying earlier.
Right, they're important. Yeah. There's a reason why they're there.
Then you have, you know, multiple people coming down to ringside, and you know, there's a gimmick involved, and everything just kind of, all of those moving parts happen seamlessly with each other, and it never, the whole storyline of the match never really gets lost or muddied by any of it. It everything adds to it. Everything is there for a reason. It makes sense.
And it all builds.
Yes. Bret comes out once the Canadian anthem. The HBK comes out second, which I was like, really? The guest ref comes out after the challenger? But, you know, he's got to have his moment. And his pyro, apparently, for being a special guest referee. I liked JR saying that Earl Hebner's going to want pyro next.
So, JR's probably shooting a little bit there.
Oh yeah, he probably was. He was like, I mean, JR's always been one. He'll underhandedly say what he's thinking if he can find a way to work it in without, you can listen to him anywhere he's ever wrestled, anywhere he's ever commentated, and he'll take a shot at somebody if he feels like they need it. Bret really enjoyed Taker's entrance. You can see it when Taker lifts his hands, and instead of the slow rise, the lights just pop on, and Bret's like, ooh, like I got goosebumps. Like, I don't know. If you go back and watch the match again, when that moment happens, I was just like, Bret really dug that. He thought that was cool. So,
I think we all did. Taker's entrance is something else every single time.
Man, I never got to see it live. I was so close. We went to the Raw before Mania, the year John Cena was calling out Taker because he didn't have a WrestleMania match, and we were like, oh man, we're gonna get to see Taker. He's got to come out at the Raw before WrestleMania, like something, just even if he just comes to the ring, something. And of course then he didn't show up, and me and my wife were very sad. We were very taken aback. But we got John Cena and Roman Reigns tag team against, I don't even remember who, in the dark match. And we were like, yeah, this is cool. This is awesome. That's fun. So anytime you get to see John Cena wrestle, it was fun.
Yeah.
So let's see. HBK just doing the old thing where he checked the gear. Bret Hart jump starts the match, but doesn't really, I guess he doesn't. He starts the match, before the bell rings, but it's not a jump start like he gets into the ring and immediately takes over on Taker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he tries to take advantage of Taker as he's taking the coat off. He's trying to, you know, so it is. I would still call that a jump start. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's before the bell.
Yeah, that's true. Sean goes for the bell. Taker starts shining early. HBK is making sure that he's seen and heard in this match in the very beginning. Kind of almost a little obnoxiously so. Like, he's getting in the way of the camera shots. Like, he's kind of got, he's got to say something every move that gets made. Brett gets run into the pole by Taker. HBK's threatening to disqualify him. Taker starts working over Brett's back. Gets him in a bear hug. Really good bear hug. Brett's selling fantastic. I mean, it's Bret Hart, so. But I like it when a guy can get a guy in that bear hug where they hook their feet on their knees or their lower legs on the knees so that they're really sitting up high in the air above the other guy's head so you can see their facial expression. And, of course, they do a great job of that. Brett ends up biting Taker's nose, which I thought was a really good spot. I've never seen anybody use that to get out of a bear hug before, to bite somebody's nose. But I was like, okay. This is another, something happens right after this, and you see Shawn Michaels is like right in between the hard camera and what's going on in the ring. Then Brett shifts the momentum back to him, starts working over the leg and knee of Undertaker. Nice figure four by Bret Hart on Undertaker. Didn't you, what do you think?
It was, yeah, definitely. And now, you know, now we're into the working on the leg. Yeah, it was a really nice figure four. As he's got him in the figure four, that's where you're working towards Undertaker's first hope spot where you got Paul Bearer coming down.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so he's looking out, and then Paul Bearer comes down the ringside. So Taker's seeing Paul Bearer, and he reverses. Taker reverses the figure four. Right at it was Paul Bearer's down there, eyeing Taker. Taker's eyeing him. Taker gets out of the ring after he reverses the figure four and knocks out Paul Bearer. But as soon as he gets Paul Bearer knocked out, Brett takes advantage and tackles his knee again. So he goes back over. Then he gets the figure four around the post, which is one of my favorite Bret Hart spots ever. I love that. I mean, if you look too close, you can see the man behind the curtain. But I don't want to see the man behind the curtain because it's such a cool spot. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yep.
Owen and Pillman come down to ringside. Brett gets back to work in the knee. Taker takes out Pillman and Owen and gets a choke slam. And this is where HBK, being an experienced ref, comes into advantage because he's distracted.
I thought they did a nice job with that storytelling piece. Taker, both of his hope spots were fighting out of some kind of submission from Brett, freeing himself from Brett just enough that he can get outside the ring and attack. First it was Paul Bearer, and this second time it's the Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
Goes after them, and then as Shawn Michaels is chasing Hart Foundation from ringside, he gets the choke slam. Now the ref's out of position. So they did a nice job there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, funny, I didn't notice that until you said it, but juxtaposition to the first match where the heel Triple H only gets an advantage when China helps him. Here in the main event, the babyface only gets an advantage long enough for him to take care of the heels. Numbers game.
Yeah, good eye. I hadn't noticed that.
Until you said that, I was like, that's cool. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't think that was necessarily done on purpose, but that's a fun coincidence. Let's see, where was I? Brett gives a roll up for two. While Taker is yelling at Shawn, Brett starts working the back. Taker does the sit up. Then we get Brett delivers a double bird to Taker, which I thought was that was the Taker, right? Yeah, he flips Taker off.
He flipped off the audience.
Oh yeah, that's right. It was the audience he flipped off. That's correct. Because we're in America and he's a heel. So, well, he's a heel in the U.S.
Oh yeah, and he was getting exactly the crowd he wanted, or exactly the reaction he wanted out of that Jersey crowd.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, yeah, I'll talk about that at the very end of the match here. And again, another Russian leg sweep. There we go. Both of the hearts delivering my favorite move. Of course, that's one of
they do a lot of similar offense, but they do a really good job of making it look different.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of my Bret Hart's Russian leg sweep is one of my favorite ever. Anyway, because he's so smooth with it. Not like anything else he does is herky jerky, but you know what I mean. So we get a sharpshooter, and Taker chokes Bret to counter it. Taker starts making a big comeback. He does the outside in choke slam over the top rope from the apron, gets a two count, goes for an old school, gets counter, gets his legs taken out. Brett goes up for a superplex. Taker, I think, lost his footing, but they kind of saved it. But I think if they had spent much longer up there, would have, you see what I'm saying? They spent a long time up on that top turnbuckle. But the payoff was good because seeing Undertaker suplexed off the top turnbuckle is a sight.
It is, yeah, absolutely. Not a lot of guys slam him from up there.
Oh yeah, not a lot of guys even lift Taker up for that matter. You know,
nope.
But to lift him and deliver that move, and of course they both sell it pretty well. Brett gets up first, puts him in the sharpshooter. Taker almost looks like he's out for a minute there. I thought they were doing, you know, like they were going to do the arm spot where they're lifting up the arm because Taker hadn't moved. And then of course he breaks out and of the sharpshooter, doesn't just break out, but kicks his legs and Brett flies out of the ring, which I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get, and I forgot how they set this up, but we get a ref bump. Shawn gets taken out by a flying Bret Hart, but I don't remember exactly how they set that up. Wasn't it? That's right.
So after Taker escapes from the sharpshooter, Bret comes back in the ring, gets on top of Taker again, and gets the sharpshooter around the ring post.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Shawn on the floor calling for the count 1, 2, 3, 4. You got to break it. Taker breaks out of the sharpshooter around the ring post, which throws Brett into Shawn, and they collapse in a heap on the floor. That's how you get the ref bump.
That's right. And then while Shawn's down, Brett goes out and gets a chair and hits Taker with it. But by the time Shawn gets back in, because Brett has to basically go out and get Shawn back into the ring, he only gets a two count. And then HBK, they're doing something, but the main focus here is HBK walks over and finds the chair and comes back into the back towards the middle of the ring with it and goes to hit Bret Hart with the chair. Bret ducks. He hits Taker. Bret gets the win. HBK reluctantly counts the fall and then bails. And every piece of trash that was in everybody's hands within three rows of the ring comes flying into the ring.
And cups, Brett loves it.
Trash. I wrote down, now that, underlined three times, is a heel title change. Like, that is some serious heat. When they're throwing stuff into the ring, then they're that upset. And it's not like the, it's not like this is, you know, a GCW audience or an audience that's super, super, like, as we would say now, I guess, in the bubble or whatever. These are, you know, just regular, everyday fans that watch a wrestling program, and they are pissed off. Like, this is this is Dusty losing to Flair pissed off. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Well, and you get that kind of reaction with good storytelling, right? So Undertaker overcame every obstacle that was thrown at him, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't supposed to work out this way. Shawn Michaels, going into the match, had to say, well, I'm not going to be biased in favor of the Undertaker. Mm-hmm. So that shouldn't have even been a concern. That shouldn't have been one of the many hurdles that he had to overcome. He overcame Paul Bearer coming to the ring. Mm-hmm. He overcame the Hart Foundation coming to the ring. Mm-hmm. That, and all the while he had to fight Bret Hart while he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He overcame all of that only for the referee and an errant chair shot to cost him the title. It really is great storytelling.
Right. Not only Bret Hart, but a Bret Hart that's willing to bend and break every rule he can in the process of trying to win.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, that's one of the things. Because a babyface Bret Hart may not, it might, he when he was a babyface, he would do like the figure four around the ring post, but usually only in heated matches where he was personally upset with the person, or like the Diesel no holds barred match. But he wouldn't just do it to do it. Here we've got the dirty Bret Hart, the guy who, you know, thumb you in the eye if he has to, bite your nose off.
Well, and part of the storytelling too is that both Undertaker and Bret, they spent a lot of time fighting on the floor, mm-hmm. and they both put each other into the ring post a bunch of times. And the story that tells is that both of these guys recognize that this opponent is going to take more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have to hurt this guy if I'm going to beat him.
That's true. So I give this one an A+. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Absolutely. Oh, the other thing that it establishes, so much fighting on the floor, was it did a good job of establishing that Sean is going to let him go.
Yeah.
He's going to call it fairly, because he was admonishing both of them. I'll disqualify you. But also he's going to let it go, mm-hmm. because that's what he would want in his match. So all of the fighting on the floor did a really good job of establishing all those things.
Yeah. Everything made sense. Everything played into the next thing. Well, it all happened seamlessly. I mean, it's an A+. You don't get any better than that.
For me. Like I said at the beginning, this match is an example of why people study Bret Hart. His matches are like an onion. You peel back a layer, mm-hmm. and there's more underneath it. I sing in a competitive choir, and our director likes to talk about living in the simplicity just beyond the perceived complexity. Mm. And that translates perfectly to what we're talking about here. If you do all of the little things right, mm-hmm. then the big picture will be beautiful. And that's Bret Hart in a nutshell.
Oh yeah, that's definitely, yeah, that's a good way to, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah, he's just, they didn't call him the excellence of execution for nothing. Guys didn't get a lot of nicknames like that back then anyway, you know?
No, but it absolutely is, you know, it's a perfectly accurate way to describe him. His fundamentals were absolutely perfect. And his storytelling was, you know, nobody did a better job.
I mean, yeah, like I said, even with the figure four on the pole, and I know I keep coming back to that, but that's one of those things. It's like, if any other person did that, it's almost completely see-through, because you can see what's happening. But with Bret, everything else is done so well that when he does do something that could be see-through, you don't, because you're not looking for it. You're not looking to critique it. You're not looking for what he's doing wrong. You're just enjoying all the stuff he does right so much that, you know, when something goes wrong, or when something happens that's not supposed to happen, that's the very, very, very rare exception, not what everybody's looking for every week.
Correct. And you're willing to forgive a little thing here and there, because everything else is just so perfect all the time.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. So A+ for that. I gave the pay-per-view a B-. I thought it had those last two matches really stepped up the whole of the overall of the pay-per-view for me. If they hadn't been so strong, it probably would have been down in the C and D category, just because some of those matches there in the middle were not even, like, some of them were just rough. They were hard to get through, or they had spots in them that just took you out of the match. But overall, yeah, I think that's about right. What do you think?
I agree with you. No, I agree with you 100%. The first match and the last two really were more than solid. They were excellent. And then the rest of the card was just kind of there.
Shamrock and Davey Boy.
Fight. Yep. That was a really solid fight, even though, you know, it was short and ended with a DQ. But the first match and the last two obviously carried the show.
Oh, yeah.
I think that the pile driver, based on the way that the match was paced and how it felt, the pile driver probably would have been the last big bump that Austin would have taken before he started to take his comeback. For whatever that's worth, they almost made it.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the thing, is they were so close to the, because you could feel the momentum of the match was about to, Stone Cold was about to take over and win somehow, some way.
Well, and that what's Owen going to give him that's bigger than that? I mean, especially in hindsight, but
might have put him in the sharpshooter, but that would have just, you know, Stone Cold would have gotten to the ropes or gotten out of it some way, somehow, hit him with a stunner, 1, 2, 3.
Right, exactly. Well, once Owen's putting the sharpshooter on, now we're into a finishing sequence. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're talking about within the structure of putting a match together. You know,
a match that makes sense. So, we got to caveat that these days. A match that makes sense.
Well, yes, that's fair. But we are talking about a match between Owen and Austin.
That's true. That is true. Two of the best to ever do it. And then Undertaker and Bret Hart. That's the thing. You look at the names. Who were in the best matches of the night? Undertaker,
some of
Bret
the best
Hart,
of all time.
Owen Hart, Steve Austin, Mankind, Triple H. I mean, Davey Boy and Ken Shamrock was the other match that was high up in my ratings.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say either of them are the best of all time, but they're definitely very good mid card guys.
Paper, you've got an LOD match on this card too. So
yeah,
the LOD match didn't come off great in practice, but on paper, there's an LOD match on this card too. So it really is. A solid card, and I would agree with you. What did you say, B?
I said a B minus.
B minus, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I think that's solid.
Better.
97 was a great year, and this was a great show.
Oh, yeah, it really was. It really was. And next week, I will have my buddy Rob Malrog. I think that's how I pronounce his name. I'm not sure, Rob, if you're listening, and I completely botched your name. I'm sorry. He's a friend of mine from Twitter, and he is, I call him Lawyer Rob in my head. That's probably what I'll call him the whole time during the things, just so you know. And we'll be doing SummerSlam 97 next week. So that's going to be fun. The Montreal Screwjob.
SummerSlam 97.
You're doing
Survivor Series next week.
Survivor Series 97. I'm sorry. I had my glass of wine. Maybe you give me a break.
Hey, you know what? Thanks so much for having me. This was really a blast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Is there anything you want to plug? Anything you got coming up? Any podcasts that you like to listen to that you want to put over while we're at it?
No, not really, man. This was, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but there's nothing in particular that I need to put over. There's no projects that I'm really working on right now.
All right.
This just sort of came along, and I was really happy to do it. This was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Well, yeah, anytime. If you ever want to come back and do another one, you're more than welcome to. We're having rotating guest hosts, so just let me know. This was fun. It was good to get your insight. You made a lot of good points that I definitely probably wouldn't have picked up on. So I appreciate that. And then thanks once again. I want to go ahead and say that the LWF, that's my CPU-driven eFed, will be back this Saturday. It will start running regular shows Saturday, 8/7 Central on my Twitch channel, which if you're listening right now, you're already on the channel. And if you're not, you'll have to find me at Back to the Ring on Twitter. And you can follow some links through there, and it'll get you there. So we will, LWF will be back this weekend, back to the ring. We'll be back next week with Survivor Series 97, the Montreal Screwjob episode. And I think that's pretty much it for me. So you ready to go, Nate?
Yes, sir. Let's get out of here.
All righty. In the immortal words of the great Tully Blanchard, it's been your pleasure. Good night.